You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi.
And I'm Katie Frankowitz. Washington State's primary was last night. The top two vote-getters in the races will advance to the November election. In Pacific County, the next ballot update is currently scheduled for Friday, but here are some of the initial results as of last night. In one of the more closely watched congressional races this year, U.S. Representative Marie Glusenkamp-Perez will face Republican State Senator John Braun in November in the race for the 3rd District seat. Glusenkamp-Perez, a Democrat, faced 8 challengers in the state's primary election Tuesday, but carried a significant majority of the votes, followed by Braun. The Southwest Washington District favored Donald Trump in past elections. Glusenkamp-Perez flipped the Republican-held congressional seat in 2022. In this election, Braun had the endorsement of President Trump. In a statement Tuesday night, Glusenkamp-Perez thanked voters for their support, but then focused on Braun. She said people can't afford business as usual under Trump, and that a vote for Braun is a vote for business as usual.
Braun released a statement Wednesday afternoon. He also touched on the impacts of high costs to Southwest Washington residents. He said businesses and natural resource-based industries need less red tape and regulation, and that his opponent has had opportunities to address issues facing the district. Now, he said, it's time for change.
In the state legislature contest, Democrat Terry Carlson leads in the 19th legislative district race, with Republican Joel McIntyre in second. In the Pacific County Sheriff's race, incumbent Daniel Garcia appears likely to face challenger Rich Byrd in November. Garcia, a Republican, was elected as a write-in candidate with no prior law enforcement experience in 2022. He is seeking a second 4-year term. Byrd spent more than 20 years in the Pacific County Sheriff's Office and has served in a variety of roles, including as a corrections officer, deputy, sergeant, lieutenant, and search and rescue coordinator. He retired from the sheriff's office in 2011. The Pacific County Commission race for a seat representing the northern end of Pacific County drew 5 candidates, but Patty Gray, the only Republican candidate in the field, led the day with 27% of the vote. Incumbent Jerry Doyle, who's running as an independent, is close behind with 23% of the vote. Doyle and Gray appear likely to face each other in November. Other contenders in that race included Democrat Ron Mullins, who has nearly 20% of the vote, Michael Runyon, who did not state a party preference with 17% of the vote, and independent Ron Black with nearly 12% of the vote. The next ballot update again is currently scheduled for Friday. Some information in this story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. 2 state Supreme Court justices appointed by Democratic Governor Bob Ferguson did well in initial election results Tuesday, but as KUOW's Amy Radel reports, Republican-backed candidates also made a strong showing.
Ferguson's appointees now seeking re-election are Colleen Melody and Theo Angeles. Both led their races last night. Melody was more than 20 points ahead of her Republican-backed challenger, Scott Edwards. Theo Angeles held a much slimmer lead. Retired Federal Way Municipal Court Judge Dave Larson was less than 2 points behind. Larson is also backed by the state Republican Party. Voters are choosing a majority of the court's justices this fall. The races are getting extra attention because the next court will likely determine the fate of the state's new income tax on high earners. A total of 5 Supreme Court races will be on the ballot this November. I'm Amy Radel reporting.
The man accused of starting one of 3 wildfires that burned hundreds of structures in Spokane appeared in court yesterday. Northwest Public Broadcasting Anna King was in the courtroom.
The purpose of the hearing was to determine release conditions for the 37-year-old Aaron Forrest Farinacci. He was arrested Monday by investigators who found a lighter and waterproof matches in his possession. The Spokane Sheriff's Office said a witness saw him crouching in the grass near where the old Trails fire started. That was the first of 3 fires that started on Saturday, burning through neighborhoods in Spokane. Farinacci is suspected of first-degree arson, At the court hearing, the Honorable Judge Tony Hazel read the release conditions.
With respect to the release conditions, the court will adopt the $1 million bond that's already in place and adopt all the proposed release conditions as suggested by the prosecution.
Farinacci's release hearing is set for August 6 at 3 p.m. In Spokane, Washington, I'm Anna King.
Washington Governor Bob Ferguson announced a federal emergency declaration for devastating wildfires yesterday. The declaration unlocks help through the Federal Emergency Management Agency for costs for evacuating, providing shelter, food, and water, and search and rescue operations. The declaration covers six counties in eastern Washington, as well as the Confederated Tribes and Bands in Yakima Nation, Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation, and the Spokane Tribe of Indians. Ferguson also declared a statewide state of emergency due to drought conditions, high temperatures, and high winds. This includes a prohibition on most outdoor burning through September 30th. Ferguson is also preparing a request for a major disaster declaration, which, if accepted, would unlock assistance to support people recovering from the disaster and provide funding for state infrastructure repairs.
This is local and regional news on KMUN.
Outdoor enthusiasts in the Northwest may need to hunker down for a while as smoke continues to spread in parts of Washington and Oregon. NWPB's Rachel Sun spoke to experts about what to expect and how to reduce your health risks.
Melissa Constanzer is a senior meteorologist at AccuWeather. She says a change in winds as early as Wednesday could bring some wildfire smoke relief along the I-5 corridor.
So places like Tacoma will start to improve some of that air quality as well.
But for those east of the Cascades, it could take longer for that smoke to leave.
And the challenge is we really can't clear the air quickly enough to get rid of that smoke. So the smoke factor will remain as long as the fires are burning.
Public health experts say people should avoid strenuous activity in smoky conditions. If you do need to be outdoors, a well-fitted N95 respirator can help reduce exposure. I'm Rachel Sun, reporting.
New polling suggests Oregon voters are skeptical of data centers in the state. Dirk Vanderhart reports.
The survey, done last month by DHM Research, asked 600 Oregon voters about their stance on data centers and AI. The results were stark. Two-thirds of voters said they'd support a temporary ban on new AI data centers, and more than 70% said they oppose offering tax breaks to lure the facilities to the state. Oregon data centers currently reap hundreds of millions of dollars in such tax breaks each year. Pollster John Horvick said what stood out to him was the relative agreement among groups of voters that often disagree.
This isn't a left-right issue, or doesn't even seem to be a generational issue.
The new polling comes as local and state officials grapple with a surge of data center projects amid the AI boom. The cities of Salem and Hillsborough have approved moratoriums on the facilities, and Governor Tina Kotek has appointed a committee to recommend stronger state policies. I'm Dirk Vanderhart, reporting.
Another piece of Astoria's new shelter-first policy to address homelessness in the city will soon be in place. KMUN's Katie Frankowitz reports.
This week, Astoria City Councilors unanimously voted to bring on Nicholas Bowling as the city's new homeless liaison. The contracted position is a key element of the city's shelter-first policy approach. Bowling, who has previously worked as a registered nurse at Columbia Memorial Hospital, was one of two candidates to apply for the position. According to the contract with the city, Bowling will work 30 hours per week. He will connect with unhoused people in the city, directing them to shelter and services, and helping them navigate a variety of resources. The homeless liaison will not be responsible for case management and will not enforce the city's camping code. City leaders plan to budget just over $65,000 for the liaison position, with a funding period that runs through the end of July 2027. City Manager Scott Spence told councilors he hopes the liaison will begin work within the next week. I'm Katie Frankowitz, reporting for KMUN.
A modest two-acre farm off I-5 near Salem aims to save the planet. Elderberry Wisdom Farms launched in 2018 and is the creation of Rose Highbear. The 81-year-old Alaskan native trains interns on urban forestry and indigenous conservation practices. But as KLCC's Brian Bull reports, funding challenges make its future uncertain.
Inside the Elderberry Wisdom Farm classroom, a group of young people monitor a kettle of pressed elderberries. David Mora Flores reads a thermometer as Rose Hybert observes.
So we're waiting. It's at 133 right now. We're trying to get it to about 90 degrees.
What happens at 90 degrees?
At 90 degrees, we can add our flavoring and pH stabilizing agents, which are honey, lemon, and cinnamon juice.
We're using raw organic honey from the Willamette Valley, and we don't want to put it in something more than like 90 degrees so we can keep all the health properties of the honey. And we use the cinnamon not as flavoring, but it increases blood circulation through the body when you're drinking it.
It's a lesson on product creation and marketing. The syrup will be used in Spritzer and other items and sold at markets in Salem and Corvallis. Mora Flores graduated with a degree in environmental studies from the University of Oregon last year. After an internship here, he was hired on as the farm's urban forest coordinator, so he practices sustainable forestry with a native emphasis.
Rose likes to focus on the seven generations before and after, and so we're really big proponents of not only doing the work and checking off that box, but we really want to see the lasting results and our influence that we leave for the next generations.
Another intern, Artemisia Valdez-Lohr, says Hybert's program brings together urban forestry, native plant nursery operations, and micro enterprises.
And puts all of those different practices into the context of traditional ecological knowledge of native peoples and how we can apply that to our scientific understanding of climate resilience, climate change, using the practices that have been tried and true for endless generations.
It's a calling Hybert herself didn't see 30 years ago. Back then, she helmed an award-winning audio series called Wisdom of the Elders, which profiled venerable people from Indian country. But then her husband and Lakota medicine man Martin Hybert died.
And when he died in 1995, I seemed to continue to get messages through interpreters, so it was from him. It wasn't really a dream, it wasn't really a vision, it was an interpretation from one of the people that did interpretations from Martin. So he told me that I would be leaving Portland.
Hybert bought her 2-acre farm in 2017 and left Wisdom of the Elders the following year. She christened her site Elderberry Wisdom Farm. Hybert's focus was now on getting her hands dirty with help.
Whoa, I am very excited about this.
Intern Claudia Vega shows off a row of potted yew trees that a local resident donated to the farm. Part of Vega's studies at the University of Arizona included traditional medicine from the Tohono O'odham and Yaqui people. This included learning about the cancer-treating properties of yew trees.
And it was such a magical experience. And when we look at them down here, they're so small, but they're so resilient. I mean, even just interacting with the trees is medicine itself.
Operations have gone well for Elderberry Wisdom Farms, but the environmental and political climate have heated up. Last year, the Trump administration slashed budgets and programs tied to DEI and environmental programs. Hybert recalls what she was about to do with the $749,000 USDA grant when the axe fell.
Planting trees in the city of Salem in the Title I school neighborhoods, low-income neighborhoods, where there is low tree canopies. So we were really excited. And then February 28, 2025, I lost 4 staff all in the same day after we got notified of the freeze. So I had to build all over again.
2 months later, U.S. Representative Andrea Salinas was able to unfreeze the funds, which run out in 2028. Intern Joaquin Ocaña is of Welsh, English, and Guatemalan descent. He juggles several duties for Hybert.
I'm the native plant nursery coordinator, so help figure out what is most important for us, what we're growing and how we're growing it, and then the Elderberry Wisdom TV and radio show.
Because it has the Indian Health Service clinic there. A lot of our native elders go there to see their doctors.
The show is carried by Capital Community Media and radio station KMUZ in Salem. Ocaña, Hybert, and Mora Flores co-host the program, which explores traditional ecological knowledge and native stewardship of the land. Hybert says there's a need for this discussion.
The prophecy says the day will come when the people of the earth will turn to native people to learn how to care for the earth and to care for one another. And so we're just trying to help fulfill that. And it just comes from the spirit world. This work is really spiritual work.
Hybert is hoping to keep Elderberry Wisdom Farm going past 2028. But despite the uncertainty, she and her interns press on. Damian Salazar is going to Oregon State University to study fisheries and wildlife conservation. He's unsure where he'll go afterwards, but hopes it's something similar to Elderberry Wisdom Farms.
To be perfectly honest, just as long as I'm outside, you know, getting my hands dirty and just bettering the planet, I'm happy with that.
I'm Brian Bull, reporting in Salem.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Department. That includes host and production assistant Ava Berardi and me, news director Katie Frankwitz. If you have a news tip or story idea, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. For links to more local and regional news, go to kmun.org/news. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The U.S. Supreme Court's Calais decision has crippled the 1965 Voting Rights Act Section 2, allowing state legislatures to erase formerly court-mandated majority-minority voting districts. African-American districts were devastated, but the Eighth Circuit just vacated a previously upheld fair map for Native American voters in North Dakota. In 2022, the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians, the Spirit Lake Tribe, and individual Native voters challenged voting districts created by the North Dakota legislature and negotiated a settlement with the state. A radical 2023 decision by the Eighth Circuit ruled that voters and voting rights groups have no private right of action to bring a challenge, only the U.S. Justice Department. The state of North Dakota saw an opportunity to overturn the Turtle Mountain decision. In an emergency appeal, Justice Brett Kavanaugh stayed the map's implementation in 2025. In its Calais decision, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled race could not be a factor in redistricting, neutralizing the Voting Rights Act Section 2 and the Turtle Mountain majority-minority map. July 7th, the Eighth Circuit vacated the map and remanded it to the lower court, where it's likely to be dismissed. It's yet another insult to Native voters who must now endure more government-sponsored discrimination with few tools left to fight it. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.